ओम शुक्लाय कृष्णस्य मति भक्तिविनोद श्रमणे तनमने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नवशेष सुनिवारी पुष्कर्ति देजिता ओम ज्ञानतमनंदस्य जनाजना सलकया चक्षु सुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मयं ददति सानन्तिकम् वंशकोपद्रुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुवैव च प्रतितनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Such an interesting story, pastime, which actually spans the third canto, here at the end of the sixth canto, has something to do with the seventh canto and the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam. Because Diti, her sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, have been killed by Lord Vishnu on behalf of Indra. So she's so upset and she wants revenge. But how can she, an insignificant person, Indra is so powerful. She's not, of course, insignificant, but compared to Indra's power, he possesses the Vajra. With that Vajra, that thunderbolt weapon, he has killed Vitrasura, who is so extraordinarily powerful. What can Diti do? So what she does do is take shelter of her husband, because naturally when one wants something, it's natural to please someone more powerful than us. And then when they ask, oh, thank you so much, anything I can do for you, then to pull out your long list of all the things that you want. This is actually, it's interesting how this is the difference, or one difference between the Vedic system of obtaining things and the Western mentality when we want something. In the Vedic system, there was always an acknowledgement, even when one was selfishly worshipping the demigods in the Karmakanda system. One was worshipping them selfishly, but one was worshipping them to gain a benediction. That means at least one was acknowledging that someone is better than me, whom I have to please in order to gain what I want, selfish and materialistic as it is, it may be. But someone, there's an acknowledgement that someone is greater than me. So if one takes that mentality that someone is greater than me, it's such a start, there's a seed of humility in it. But at least there is the that seed of understanding that not only someone greater than me, but there's someone greater than the greatest of the greatest. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsava Britya. But there is one greater than the greatest. And if one is going to have to please someone who is greater than us to get what we want, we might as well ultimately please the greatest of the greatest. So within that system of Karmakandya, or worship of the demigods, there is the seed of bhakti, because of that acknowledgement. And the second seed is also there because when one follows the Vedas to please another, one is using a descending system. That means that one isn't acting whimsically. That means, again, one is accepting an authority. But in the Western scientific, technological mentality, the mood is always no authority. Rather, if I desire something and fix my mind on something, by my power, I can achieve it. There is something wonderful to be said for determination, but that's taking it too far, as if things really rested in our power alone, and therefore the mentality is if someone doesn't achieve something, it means he's lost, he doesn't have enough determination, there's something wrong with him. When actually, two people may work equally as hard, and one may get great success and the other person may get nothing. There's karma involved. Karma implies, this came up earlier in the Bhagavatam, karma implies, if there's a law of karma and someone is awarding us our karma, that means that there is a lawmaker and there's a law enforcer. But as soon as we say it all depends on me, we are in great, great illusion. Our false ego has assumed proportions that are far disproportionate to our actual situation. In other words, we are so tiny. We are so tiny, and yet our self-concept, false ego, so huge. So huge. How could this possibly happen to me? I am so what? So insignificant. That's what we actually are. But in any case, Diti wanted to please another, her husband. Her husband, Kasyapa Muni, was so powerful, a great sadhu, sage, very realized. So she pleased him and pleased him and pleased him. And of course, in the Western mentality, the same thing is there too. When one wants something, one goes to a rich person, a very rich person, a powerful person, and smiles very, very sweetly and gives him a present and this and that. But in any case, Diti has pleased her husband by her serving attitude, but her serving attitude is not truly service, because she wants something in return. So when one wants something in return, it's actually just business. So mixed in with her loving affection for her husband and dutiful dealing with her husband and full respect for her husband, she has some motives. So the last verse we read yesterday was text 36 of chapter 18. And Kasyapa Muni, so pleased by her gentility and her serving attitude, says, "Because you have worshipped me with great devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall reward you by fulfilling your desires, which are unobtainable for an unchaste wife. So whatever you want, I will fulfill. What do you desire?" It's also very interesting. You're worshipping me, O gentlewoman, bhaktita, with devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we serve another, we are serving another, and in a sense it's service to Krishna. It's service to Krishna, and we're seeing Krishna manifest through that person, whether it be husband or spiritual master or whatever. But when we serve another, it's service to Krishna in that sense, that Krishna is manifesting through that person. And if we're actually sincerely trying to serve Krishna, even if the person is faulty, Krishna will accept that service. Just like if we go to a bank and we give the money that we wish to deposit in our account to a teller, and the teller accepts it on behalf of the bank, but has a cheating mentality, and he says, "Okay, one for the bank and one for me. Two for the bank, four for me." So he's cheating with your money. But yet, Because he's accepted it on behalf of the bank, because he's a representative of the bank, and that's the bank system. Even if he has stolen, the bank has to recognize the money that you've deposited and you show on your receipt. You've done it in good faith according to their system. And even if there is a fault in the mechanism, still you get the credit in your account. So behind all these systems, the guru system, the vanashrama system, behind the system of marriage even, is Krishna, who in that sense, he guarantees everything and makes sure that his potency is flowing through it. And of course, everyone must act to the best of their capacity and follow standards. But Krishna is behind guaranteeing the system, and he accepts things in these ways. So in any case, Diti had pleased her great husband, and he said, okay, what do you wish from me? And he said, oh my husband, oh great soul, Diti replied. This is text 37. I have lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So, oh no, what a benediction. She's asking for, give me what you want. I want someone to kill Indra, the chief of the demigods. The word that she uses is Indra Hanam. But Indra Hanam means one who can kill Indra, but it also has another meaning, which she wasn't aware of. And also, she wasn't at all intending. It means one who follows Indra. So actually, she's going to end up with sons who follow Indra. But watch how this is enacted. And see the incredible lesson that we'll learn from this, and how this pastime reveals the potency of bhakti yoga, of devotional service. So how does Kasyapa react when he hears this? This is what isn't at all what he was thinking. Text 38, upon hearing Diti's request, Kasyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. Prabhupada's short purport. Although Kasyapa Muni was eager to fulfill the desire of his wife, Diti, when he heard that she wanted a son to kill Indra, his jubilation was immediately reduced to nothing because he was averse to the idea. Completely averse to the idea. He was a sadhu, a holy man. The last thing he wanted was to kill Indra. And then he began to lament. Kasyapa Muni thought, alas, I have now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a woman, my wife. Therefore, I am surely a wretched person who will glide down towards hell. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man, therefore all condemnation upon me. I'm not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. There's some purports here that we'll read after we hear the story. A woman's face is as attractive and beautiful as a blossoming lotus flower during autumn. Her words are very sweet, and they give pleasure to the ear. But if we study a woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp, like the blade of a razor. In these circumstances, who could understand the dealings of a woman? Don't worry. Prabhupada explained somewhere in one of the purports that devotee women are exempt. To satisfy their own interests, women deal with men as if the men were most dear to them. But no one is actually dear to them. Women are supposed to be very saintly, but for their own interest, they can kill even their husbands, sons, or brothers, or cause them to be killed by others. I promise to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. So he's considered what to do about the situation that he's in. He's already promised to give her what she wanted. She wanted Indra dead, to have a son who can kill Indra. And he's promised it, and he can't break his word. Such character. So he thought, how can I gain what I want, keep my word, but avoid what she wants? So he thought. And what did he think? He thought that I'm going to give her a vow of vrata that will be so potent that it will give her sons. But this vow, called the Pumsa Vrata, Pumsavana, this ceremony, this ritual, this process, will not only give her what she wants, but it will purify her heart so she'll no longer want what she wants. She'll want something so much better. So he has a solution that he says will be quite suitable. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, relating this to Sukadeva to Maharaj Prakrit, said, Kasyapa Muni, thinking in this way, became somewhat angry. Notice who he became angry at. He condemned himself. O Maharaj Prakrit, descendant of Kuru, he spoke to Diti as follows. My dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely will get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. Ditya replied, My dear Brahmana, I must accept your advice and follow the vow. Now let me understand what I have to do, what is forbidden, and what will not break the vow. Please clearly state all this to me. Kasyapa Muni said, My dear wife, to follow this vow, do not be violent or cause harm to anyone. Do not curse anyone and do not speak lies. Do not cut your nails and hair, and do not touch impure things like skulls and bones. My dear gentle wife, never enter the water while bathing, never be angry, and do not even speak or associate with wicked people. Never wear clothes that have not been properly washed, and do not put on a garland that has already been worn. Never eat leftover food, never eat prasad offered to the goddess Kali Durga, and do not eat anything contaminated by flesh or fish. Do not eat anything brought or untouched by a sudra or anything seen by a woman in her menstrual period. Do not drink water by joining your palms. After eating, you should not go out to the street without having washed your mouth, hands, and feet. You should not go out in the evening or with your hair loose. Nor should you go out unless you are properly decorated with ornaments. You should not leave the house unless you are very grave and are sufficiently covered. You should not lie down without having washed both of your feet or without being purified, nor with wet feet or with your head pointed west or north. You should not lie naked or with other women or during the sunrise or sunset. Putting on washed clothing, being always pure, so that's all the what you shouldn't do, the nishidha, the regulatory prohibitions. Putting on washed clothing, being always pure, and being adorned with turmeric, sandalwood pulp, and other auspicious items. Before breakfast, one should worship the cows, the brahmanas, the goddess of fortune, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With flower garlands scented with pulp, ornaments, and other paraphernalia, a woman following this vow should worship women who have sons and whose husbands are living. The pregnant wife should worship her husband and offer him prayers. She should meditate upon him, thinking that he is situated in her womb. He is indirectly there through the child, through the son. Kasyapa Muni continued, if you perform this ceremony called the Pumsavana, adhering to the vow with faith for at least 1 year, you will give birth to a son destined to kill Indra. But if there is any discrepancy in the discharge of this vow, the son will be a friend to Indra. O King Prickit, Diti, the wife of Kasyapa, agreed to undergo the purificatory process known as Pumsavana. So that process is going to be very clearly described in the following chapter. So after describing this to his wife, she replied by saying, yes, I shall do everything according to your instructions. With great jubilation, she became pregnant, having taken semen from Kasyapa, and faithfully began discharging the vow. O King, Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Prickit, O King who are respectful to everyone, Indra understood Diti's purpose. So Indra understood that she was performing a vow to have a son who would kill him. And thus, Indra contrived to fulfill his own interests. So Diti is going to perform some devotional service. But is it pure devotional service? No. Because Bhagavad Dharma, which we've been hearing about, devotional service which we've been hearing about in the last several cantos, especially here in the sixth canto, means to perform activities meant for Krishna's pleasure. But she has a plan. And Indra, hearing about her plan, also comes up with his own plan. Is his own plan pure devotional service? No. So to fulfill his own interests, he contrived his plan. Following the logic that self-preservation is the first law of nature, he wanted to break Diti's promise. Thus he engaged himself in the service of Diti, his aunt, who was residing in an ashram. So he began to serve her. Indra served his aunt daily by bringing flowers, fruits, roots, and wood for jugis from the forest. He also brought her kusha grass, leaves, sprouts, there you go, earth and water exactly at the proper time. O King Prickit, as the hunter of a deer becomes like a deer by covering his body with deer skin and serving the deer, so Indra, although at heart the enemy of the sons of Diti, became outwardly friendly and served Diti in a faithful way. Indra's purpose was to cheat Diti. As soon as he could find some fault in the way she discharged the vows of the ritualistic ceremony, however, he wanted to be undetected, and therefore he served her very carefully. So Diti had served very carefully and had a plan. Indra now is serving Diti very carefully, covered, and he also has a plan. O master of the entire world, that's Sukadeva Goswami speaking to the king, Maharaj Prickit, who is the king of the earth. When Indra could find no faults, he thought, how will there be good fortune for me? Thus he was full of deep anxiety. Well, as soon as we start thinking, how should the universe bring me good fortune, immediately we're in full anxiety, deep anxiety. Because we're taking full responsibility for ourselves. And so many things must occur beyond our control. that are beyond our control, because the universe, in case anyone hasn't noticed it, doesn't work exactly the way we want. In fact, it has been said in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, viparyato, it works just the opposite. Well, and Prahlad Maharaj will say in the next canto that what we don't want to happen happens, and what we do want to happen doesn't happen. It must go on like this, not completely, always. So thus Indra, wishing to fulfill his plan, was in great anxiety. Deep anxiety. Having grown weak and thin because of strictly following the principles of the vow, Diti once, unfortunately, neglected to wash her mouth, hands, and feet after eating, and went to sleep during the evening twilight. She had committed a fault. Finding this fault, Indra, who has all the mystic powers, the yogic cities, such as Animan Lagima, can make himself very tiny, entered Diti's womb while she was unconscious, being fast asleep. After entering Diti's womb, Indra, with the help of his thunderbolt, cut into 7 pieces her embryo, which appeared like glowing gold because she had been impregnated by Kasyapa Muni, and because she was potently following this vow, and the embryo, the child within a womb, was becoming so powerful. In 7 places, 7 different living entities began crying. Indra told them, "Do not cry." And then he cut each of them into 7 pieces again. O king, being very much aggrieved, they pleaded to Indra with folded hands, saying, "Dear Indra, we are the Maruts, your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us?" When Indra saw they were actually his devoted followers, he said to them, "If you are all my brothers, you have nothing more to fear from me." Sukadev Goswami continues. So now how many Maruts were there after one was cut into 7 and then the 7 were cut into 7? Everyone can take out their calculators. "My dear King Parikit, you were burned by the Brahmastra of Asatama, but when Lord Krishna entered the womb of your mother, you were saved. Similarly, although the one embryo was cut into 49 pieces by the thunderbolt of Indra, they were saved by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." First result. That Krishna was inclined to give them mercy. Diti was worshipping the Lord in this Pumsavana ritual, which was devotional service. So the result of that attracted the mercy of Krishna, even though her motive was completely improper. But she was performing devotional service. So the result was protected by the Lord, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 67, 66. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength in spiritual life, the 49 Maruts were born. How then is it wonderful that the Maruts, although born from within the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? So that they were supposed to come out demons or inimical, daityas, inimical to the demigods, but yet they came out to be demigods due to the potency and the purification that resulted from Diti's worship. So the result was so elevated. And Not only were they elevated, they were saved from death, from being killed. 68. Because of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Diti was completely purified. When she got up from bed, she saw her 49 sons along with Indra. These 49 sons were all as brilliant as fire and were in friendship with Indra, exactly the opposite of what she wanted, so she must have been furious. And therefore, she was very pleased. Thereafter, Diti said to Indra, "My dear son, I adhered to this difficult vow just to get a son to kill you 12 Adityas." She was happy that the sons were the friends of Indra now, because by performing devotional service, even though her motivation was imperfect and impure, she was so purified. She was happy with the good result. Like Dhruva Maharaj, who worshipped the Lord to get the kingdom, but he worshipped with such determination and fixedness. He didn't worship the demigods, he worshipped the Lord. And the result was that when he saw the Lord, he no longer had those desires anymore because of his devotional service, and especially the directly seeing the Lord had purified him so much. Diti said, "I've prayed only for one son, but now I see there are 49. How has this happened?" She was happy, she was purified, she was speaking so openly to Indra, her heart was completely simple and pure now. "I tried to do this vow to kill you, but now I see there was not one son that I had done the vow for, but there are 49. How has this happened? My dear son Indra, if you know, please tell me the truth. Do not try to speak lies." Indra replied, "My dear mother, because I was grossly blinded by selfish interest, I lost sight of religion. When I understood that you were observing a great vow in spiritual life, I wanted to find some fault in you. When I found such a fault, I entered your womb and cut the embryo to pieces." Prabhupada explains in his purport, when Diti, Indra's aunt, explained to Indra without reservations what she had wanted to do, Indra explained his intentions to her. Thus both of them, instead of being enemies, freely spoke the truth. This is the qualification that results from contact with Vishnu, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, yasyastya bhaktya bhagavara kinchana sarvasgunas tatra samaste sura. If one develops a devotional attitude and becomes purified by worshipping the Supreme Lord, all the good qualities are certainly manifest in his body. Because of being touched by worship of Vishnu, both Diti and Indra were purified. Now, Diti was worshipping Lord Vishnu directly with the ritual, so she was purified. But how is Indra purified? He was serving with a bad motive, improper motive. He was serving someone who was worshipping Lord Vishnu, who had an improper motive also. And she ended up completely purified, and he ended up completely purified too. So how powerful is devotional service, because it's touching Vishnu, the Lord, through the internal energy. Because devotional service is not of this world. It's the spiritual energy of the Lord. Ultimately, it's the energy, Ladini Shakti, Sambit Ladini Shakti. It's the internal energy of the Lord. So Indra said to her, "I entered your womb and cut the embryo to pieces. First I cut the child in the womb into 7 pieces, which became 7 children. And was I satisfied with that? No. Then I cut each of the children into 7 pieces again, and by the grace of the Supreme Lord, however, none of them died." my dear mother, when I saw that all 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided that this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service in the worship of Lord Vishnu. A secondary result. So what is better than a secondary result? A primary result. And what is the primary result of worshiping the Lord? That He is pleased. Yes, one will gain one's desires. Akama sava kamava moksha kamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushapara. But more than achieving one's desires, if one has desires, one will become purified because of the Lord's pleasure, because He is so liberal. Aho pakiyam stanakalakutam jighamsi adyadyapi svaddi lev hegatim datri uchito tatonyam kamva dayalum sharanam brijema. This verse was recited by Uddhav to Maitreya Muni in the beginning of the third canto, and it describes Kamva Dayalam Sharanam Brajema. Who could worship someone more merciful than Lord Krishna? Because talking about bad motives, Putana in the tenth canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes how Putana disguised herself as a beautiful woman and came to Yasoda, the mother of Krishna, while Krishna was just a small baby drinking milk from his mother's breast. And she said, "Please allow me to feed your beautiful son milk from your breast." But her intention was to kill Krishna. And she had smeared poison upon her breast. And when Krishna, her idea was to allow Krishna to suck her breast and kill him. So she had come to Krishna seeming like a nurse, a wet nurse, but actually as a murderer, with the motive of a murderer, a child killer. So what could be worse than that and more duplicitous than that? And how did Krishna deal with that? He sucked her breast and he sucked out her life. So where did she go for her heinous act? Krishna took, out of all the bad she was trying to do to kill him, she had approached him as if a nurse. As if a nurse. As if someone trying to show him affection. And he took that part and rejected, ignored all the hideous intentions and murderous and cruel intentions that she had, and took that one part of coming to him as a nurse. And when he killed her, he awarded her the position of datri, or nurse in the spiritual world. So therefore, eternally. So therefore, Uddhava says, Kamva dayalum. Who can be more dayalu than Krishna? So that touch with Krishna is so powerful. So Indra says, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, however, none of them died. My dear mother, when I saw that all 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service and worship of Lord Vishnu. Although those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. The ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the Most Dear Lord, who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness which is available even in hell? Prabhupada's purport. In other words, not that we should come to Krishna and serve Krishna to kill him and to gain all our material desires, because that is not the highest way to come to Krishna. It is not the pure way. But not also that we should think, well, I'm not pure, so therefore I shouldn't worship Krishna. Because if one worships Krishna by touch with devotional service, one will become purified. But yet we should know that the purification is more desired than the impure service, because we want to serve Krishna with a full loving heart. And then Krishna even will give himself. Bhaktivatsala atma parjantivadanyata. Not only if we serve Krishna for material desires, he will purify us and give us those material desires, but if we serve him purely with great love, he will give himself. Prabhupada's purport. An intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. That is the test of a devotee, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janmani janmanishvare bhavadtad bhaktir haitiki tayi. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. A pure devotee never begs the Lord for material happiness in the shape of riches, followers, a good wife, or even mukti, liberation. The Lord promises, however, yoga chemam vahamyaham, I voluntarily bring everything necessary for my service. So Indra then says to Aditi, O my mother, O best of all women, I am a fool. Kindly excuse me for whatever offenses I have committed. Your 49 sons have been born unhurt because of your devotional service. As an enemy, I cut them to pieces, but because of your great devotional service, they did not die. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Diti was extremely satisfied by Indra's good behavior. Then Indra offered his respects to his aunt with profuse obeisances, and with her permission he went away to the heavenly planets with his brother Samaras. My dear King Prickett, I have replied as far as possible to the question you have asked me, specifically in regard to this pure auspicious narration about the Marats. Now you may inquire further and I shall explain more. So in the next chapter he's going to explain about what is this wonderful process that to worship the Lord that brought these incredible results. Everyone purified from their impure positions. Those who are meant to be demons become demigods. Those who want to kill become purified, and they are begging forgiveness from those who they have tried to hurt. All good comes. Now, there were so many wonderful purports, as I wanted to finish, I didn't read many. I'll read some of them. My dear mother, when I saw that, this is Indra speaking, I saw that all your 49 sons were alive, I was certainly struck with wonder. I decided this was a secondary result of your having regularly executed devotional service in worship of Lord Vishnu, Prabhupada's purport. For one who engages in worshipping Lord Vishnu, nothing is very wonderful. This is a fact. In Bhagavad Gita 18:78, it is said, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Parto Dunardara, Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhutir Juvanitya Matir Mama. Whenever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and whenever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also be certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Yogeshwar is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all mystic yoga, who can do anything and everything he likes. This is the omnipotence of the Supreme Lord. For one who pleases the Supreme Lord, No achievement is wonderful. Everything is possible for him. The next verse. Although those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not even want liberation, Lord Krishna fulfills all their desires. Purport. When Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, he declined to take any benedictions from him, for he was fully satisfied by seeing the Lord. Nonetheless, the Lord is so kind that because Dhruva Maharaj in the beginning had desired a kingdom greater than his father's, he was promoted to Dhruva Loka, the best planet in the universe. Therefore in the Shastra it is said, Akama Savakama Vamoksha Kama Daradi Tavrena Bhakti Yogeni Ajeta Purusha Param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he is full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. One should engage in full devotional service. Then, even though he has no desires, whatever desires he previously had can all be fulfilled simply by his worship of the Lord. The actual devotee does not desire even liberation, anyabhilasita sunyam. The Lord, however, fulfills the desire of the devotee by awarding him opulence that will never be destroyed. A karmi's opulence is destroyed, but the opulence of a devotee is never destroyed. A devotee becomes more and more opulent as he increases his devotional service to the Lord. Here's a comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Prabhupada has included, describing how Indra had cut the embryo into 7 pieces and then into 7 more pieces, and they said, after he told them, do not cry. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Indra, by his yogic power, first expanded the body of one of the Maruts into 7, and then when he cut each of the 7 parts of the original body into pieces, there were 49. When each body was cut into 7, other living entities, souls, entered the new bodies, and thus they were like plants, which become separate entities when cut into various parts and planted on a hill. The first body was one. When it was cut into many pieces, many other living entities entered the new bodies. That was one of the first questions I asked Prabhupada too. What happens when you cut a worm in half? First there's one worm, one living entity, and then there's 2. How is that? So he said, another soul enters. Same answer. Any questions or comments about this? Yes.
Dhruva Maharaj, after he performed austerities in worshipping Vishnu, saw Vishnu came to him and he saw God, and then he had no desires left, zero desires. Why is it that he was still given his benediction from his previous desires, and would that not be an obstruction to his devotional service, and if not, why not?
No. When one worships demigods or goes to a materialistic person to gain one's material desires, one gets his desires fulfilled, perhaps, but one's heart remains impure, and practically speaking, the attaining of one's desires, rather than satisfying us, that one desire gives birth to so many desires. Just like the Maruts got cut up into 49 pieces. If you get one desire, say, if you ever notice that if you write a list of every of all the things you want, or you have to, or the shopping list or whatever, or the things that you need, as soon as you get those things, it's not like your list is empty anymore. More miraculously come to fill up the list, because it's, that's the nature of desires. They increase. But when we go to Krishna to satisfy our desires, He fulfills them in such a way that the heart is purified as well. We get our desires unless Krishna, there's another part, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's expressed very nicely. I won't be able to quote it, but sometimes Krishna, rather than fulfilling the desires, He takes away everything and ruins everything too, so you have nowhere to go except to Him. And Prabhupada said that if Krishna is pleased with someone, He gives them His material desires, but when He's really pleased, He takes everything away. So we have no other choice, and we have to go to Him. And then when we go to His shelter, He pats us on the head, and she sits very sweetly to let us know that here we've returned to our shelter, Saranagati. But Krishna will fulfill desires too. Sometimes in India, people are afraid of worshipping Krishna because they know that Krishna can take everything away and purify one. And rather they worship Lord Shiva, who is Ashutosh, who fulfill material desires. So they'd rather worship Lord Shiva, have a contaminated heart and worship Lord Shiva. But who is actually getting the greater benefit? So these kind of stories are also told, these pastimes, not stories in the sense of fictional stories, but pastimes are also related, so that we will, don't worry, Krishna will take care of you. But He won't give desires that will cause the increase of desires and have one remain in the material world, but He'll fulfill the desires in such a way that one is purified. Is that? Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
The part today where you mentioned, Prabhu, that, you know, like Diti and Indra both were, in this case, having desires, but they were to their own selfish benefit. And they were quite a bad desire, actually, especially Diti's one that he wanted. You know, Indra killed.
Well, Indra's wasn't so brilliant either.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, he wanted to kill children, unborn children in the womb, just to protect himself.
So,
yes.
Exactly. So in that, and yet, you know, Indra knows the qualities of Vishnu, and he's also learned it in the Shastras.
Mm.
So wouldn't that be considered as in the next of instruction, is that the seventh offense, that is committing offense against the holy name, and that is a very, very heavy offense. So yet, why did he get benediction and not?
The seventh offense, namno baladyasi papabuddhi navidyate nasya yamarhi shuddhi, means that you're committing sinful activities thinking, I'll commit this sinful activity, but then I'll chant the holy names to remove the reaction against that sin. So knowingly I'm committing the sinful activities, and then I'll wipe it, the reaction, clean by chanting Krishna's names. Sinning and then cleaning using a purificatory method. But that's not what Indra did. He was just ready to perform his activity. He wasn't doing it, and then I'm going to worship Krishna to get free. But earlier he did actually do that when he killed Vishwarupa. After Vritrasura was it was Vitrasura, not Visarupa. He had done that, and all the sages had said, don't worry, we'll perform an Aswamedha sacrifice to remove the sin. So in that case, he was performing a sinful act of killing, especially killing a Brahmin, and then wished to perform a ritual to remove the reaction of the sin, which isn't at all what he's doing here. And for that, he had to suffer greatly. So this isn't, technically, it isn't committing offenses on the strength of chanting, because that is trying to remove the reaction. That's the idea of that. Any other questions or comments? This is a specific ritual. It was a ritual meant specifically to please the Lord. It was devotional service. That was Kasyapa Muni's plan. She wants this, but I'm going to give it to her in such a way that she's going to become purified. So he tricked her. So one needs proper guidance how to perform things in such a way that they purify us. So there are so many sacrifices to be performed, for instance. But the best of all sacrifices is what? Yajnaya Sankirtanaya. Yes, and Sankirtan. Yes.
Is that even during the other ages as well? Isn't it just the Yuga Dharma?
But it existed in other ages, but it's now it's especially...
Best.
Well, it's especially best now. It's because it's the Yuga Dharma and because we can't do the others. But if... So it's certainly best for now. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's giving it makes... He's giving a very special kind of result with this best too. A very, very high position of a high level of entrance into Prema Bhakti by his causeless mercy. It describes, where did I read that? When the sages saw that in Satya Yuga, or in Dwapara Yuga, there was quarrel. To remove the quarreling, they introduced deity worship. So they gave something better in the sense of more suitable for the particular age and time period. In that sense, better. So in this age, which is Kali, the age of quarrel, practically the only way you can stop people from quarreling is if you can somehow get them to sit down together and chant Hare Krishna, because it's Kali Yuga. And everyone has so much anxiety that it takes a long time of chanting before one's mind starts quarreling with itself and thinking about all the things that you have to do and should be doing and could have been doing, and all the people who did things to you today that you'd like to give them back for, and all the things you want and need. And So just by chanting, the mind cools down and gets filled with a certain type of spiritual energy, which is very, very sweet, which is Krishna, Abhinatam Namanamano, who is Krishna. Okay.
Yeah. Just one more quick question in regards to learning Krishna.
Yeah.
From 7:30 till tap 2, I think, in the morning.
7:30 p.m.
Yeah. I believe in India they chant more.
Yeah, what they do is
bathe in the sea or in the rivers?
Bathe somewhere with all your clothes on after the eclipse too, and you always chant, and no one will sleep. It's as if they're following it strictly. They close and the whole atmosphere, not only in India, but it becomes spooky. When there's an eclipse, and they, you know, the food that they have around, don't get rid of because it's contaminated after that. Change everything.
I was thinking that perhaps we could have a kirtan after class tomorrow night, just to ward off any evil.
Yeah.
Anyone else is into it?
Yeah. We have a little bit of a program plan for tomorrow. But you're asking a question. I'm remembering to remind everyone tomorrow, if Krishna allows, there's a lot to cover. But if Krishna allows, we'll complete the sixth canto tomorrow, and it's also the full moon, and it's also the first day of Chaturmasya and Guru Purnim, which is the appearance day of Srila Vyasadeva, and it's a holy day, auspicious day. So Jagatini Mataji is going to bring her Gopinath deity, and I don't know how hundreds and hundreds of his followers and assistants. We're not sure yet. We haven't decided who's coming, who's not coming. But Giriraj will come, and my Girirajas will come, and Gwanatai will come, so, and we'll have kirtan. And if everyone can come and bring something for them, a little, whatever you like. You can bring, offer them some sprouts. We'll bring a cow for them to feed them too.
I've got a new batch of wheatgrass.
Okay. That's good. What if we can bring something and offer it with devotion? We'll have some kirtan.
You will bring the cows?
Huh?
You will bring the cows?
I'm not promising anything, but we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
Graham does the best move, but he's not here at the moment.
There's a habit comes from the United States. It's not amongst the devotees so much, but even American devotees say it. When there's men and women together, there's no pronoun, because it's either he or she like that. Well, anyway, what they say is, "Okay, guys." That's what they say in the United States. Okay, you guys, let's go. But in Hindi, what does guy mean? Cows. Okay. You guys. You want to go now, guys? Okay, so tomorrow, let's come.
Maybe we could have like a mass mooing together in class that might help with the mooning.
You know what moo spelled backwards is?
Yeah.
What? No, that's moo spin fell forward. It's om. And om is no different from Hare Krishna. So with your permission, we'll chant Hare Krishna instead of... if that's all right. But after, you can go out if you like.
Some people can have a mass mooing as well. Unrelated?
Huh?
Unrelated?
Sorry?
You can...
Yeah, I'll leave.
But will you have any followers? If you go to the right place, you might. Like the barn.
Like Mutan. We're not curious about Mutan. Mutan.
You could start a whole new movement. Movement. Again, the question is about followers. But anyway, don't let that deter you.
But Mahaprabhu,
not Mahaprabhu. This conversation is going crazy. Tomorrow we'll try again. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.